Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we are back again. This is Reverend Dr. Floyd Jr., Mississippi Fresno from the West Coast. We have our Dr. Jean Kennedy, who will be on the line with us here just momently. She is from Atlanta, Georgia. This is Open Mic Night. Open Mic Night means that you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I have something I want to talk about. But as we wait on Dr. Kennedy, I want to give a shout-out to Ms. Harris, who took time out to call into our show, a good friend of mine, lovely person, lovely woman, woman of God. And she can sing real good, too. I'm surprised she hasn't made any albums or anything, but I know she's blushing right now. But anyway, we just want to give a shout-out to her right now for calling in into our show. This is Real Talk with the number one doctors. You know, we've been off the air a little while. You know, I think sometimes, you know, we need to take a break and kind of step back, take a look at some things, you know, but we're back now. You know, we do a lot of heavy lifting, myself and Dr. Jean Kennedy, who is she is the best in the West. She don't take no mess. And I know she's blushing right now and grinning and all that. But, you know, we just like to thank her for taking her time out for the love as one of our elders to work with us young people to keep us on track. She is from Fresno, but she decided to move to Atlanta, Georgia. She's creating a pipeline from Atlanta, Georgia, to California for its resources and different things like that. And so we're just glad that she has taken out the time to do that. We talk about many, many topics. I'd like for you to go to her Facebook whenever you have time, Jean Kennedy. Is her Facebook, and I just want to make sure that I'm saying her Facebook name right, because I want to make sure that you get to her Facebook. She has a couple of Facebooks. Maybe she's going to take some of them down, but she used to be on the radio station here in Fresno, and she did a lot of good work here, speaking truth to power, addressing systemic racism. She was also part of the AIDS. She was an advocate for folks with AIDS and bringing education to Fresno. She did a lot of different workshops here in Fresno. Dr. Jean Kennedy is her Facebook. I got her up right now on my screen, and she is always have that hand up under her chin, and I know she's grinning right now when I say that, but she just tickles me when she take a picture like that. But anyway, she did a lot of advocating for the homeless here in Fresno. Around that, she was very instrumental in helping to pass a policy here. She was on the front lines when we had to stand off with the our local government, police department, highway patrol, sheriff. She was right there in the middle, encouraging our homeless people to take a stand. And so we're going to go ahead and bring her in right now. I think I've said a lot of good stuff about her right now, and I know she's over there in Atlanta just grinning right now. But Dr. Kennedy, welcome to your show. Real Talk with the number one doctor.
Well, thank you, Reverend Harris. Good to be back on the show again. I heard you. I'm not sure what you're going to ask me for, but I heard you.
Well, you know, we got to put some humor in all this craziness that we're dealing with here in America. So, you know, I think sometimes we need to pat ourselves on the back sometimes.
Well, I got to tell you something. You know, it is true. There, I remember growing up in the church. You know, I'm a preacher's kid, right? So you know what that means. But I remember there was a song that they always used to sing. It was called Give Me the Roses While I Live. trying to travel on, because giving me the roses when I'm dead doesn't make any sense, as it were. So, you know, I appreciate you saying what you're saying, because when I'm 6 foot under, it don't matter who's crying and hollering and screaming and carrying on and saying they wish they could have, should have, would have, it does not make any difference. I can't hear it, and we as a community have to really get to the place where we learn to give each other some kudos while they're alive. So I appreciate that. I think if we did that more, we would show a lot more empathy to each other instead of being in each other's face and, you know, trying to act the fool in the things we do. But in this time in which we live in, we've got to learn how to be kind to one another. It's going to take kindness to get us all to the next level. So truly, my brother, I do appreciate that. I always say I feel like you're a little brother to me, or I feel like I'm a mother to you. I'm not sure which one it is, but somewhere in between the 20-something years that we have a difference in our age, I feel like somehow I've got you up underneath my wings, and so you're I feel like you're the bigger son or a bigger brother to me. So we'll just keep it going on the way we do.
Yes, yes. So Dr. Kennedy, we have a caller on the line, Ms. Harris, who I contacted her. She was in a kind of a fender bender accident this week, and kind of shook her up. She had posted it on Facebook, and we just thank God that it wasn't worse than what it was. She could be deceased right now, but God spared her life, and she's, you know, a little bruised up and shaken up, but, you know, she's a big girl, and I believe that she's going to shake it off, and a little sore, what have you, but she took time out to tune in tonight, and she's on the line. I just want to see if she may want to say hello. If not, that's fine. Caller 0623. Are you there? Caller 0623.
Yes, I am, and I would like to say thank you, guys, and hello, Dr. Kelly and Dr. Harris. Thanks for having me on tonight. And as you were saying, I was in a pretty much a Lord taking care of me accident, to where he let me know once again how much he loves me. So I can say tonight that I feel blessed that he brought me through that incident. So
wonderful.
I want to say thank you for having me on.
Thank you for calling in and taking time out. I monitor her Facebook quite a bit. She's a singer also. You know, tonight is open mic night. We pretty much talk about, you know, whatever you want to talk about, but I just felt led to let our listening audience know that keep you in prayer. I know you're going to bounce back real strong. And one thing she said, Dr. Kennedy, that caught my attention tonight, she said that, you know, when it happened, you know, it made her start doing some reflection of her life, you know. And I think, you know, when things happen, you know, out of the ordinary, you know, I think, you know, it makes us kind of take a step back and say, wow, you know, God trying to get my attention, you know, my walk with God, is it where it is? You know, if something would have happened, do I know what my destiny would have been? So, you know, I appreciate her, you know, saying that, because it made me even think, you know, about myself. You know, where am I at? You know, because we're dealing with a lot of stuff right now. We're dealing with trying to survive. We're dealing with trying to raise our children. We're dealing with trying to make money, pay our bills. We're dealing with this black-on-black crime. We're dealing with police brutality. We're dealing with a high case of the epidemic of AIDS. I mean, just so much that the black man and the black woman is dealing with. That's not to say that no one else is not dealing with issues, but I think for us right now in our country, that we have been oppressed for over 400 years, have not received no reparations for the torture of black people in this country. It just, you know, to have, you know, our cities, over 23 cities were built after slavery burnt to the ground. It's like, how do you process all that, Dr. Kennedy? And I gave your introduction earlier to our listening audience that you are organizational psychologist. You go in and you dissect systems, you dissect organizations, and look at things from different angles, look at situations from different lenses. So where are we at right now, Dr. Kennedy, in 2016? We know what Dr. King went through, Black Panthers went through, Malcolm X went through, Thurgood Marshall, Shirley Chisholm, Rosa Parks. But where are we at in 2016? Did all the work that they did, the groundwork that they did for us during that terrible time of the 60s, has it all went in vain, or is there still hope?
Well, you know what? It really is a complex time in which we're living in. I think I recall reading not too long ago out of one of my books, I think it was called Organizations in Action, written by James Thompson. I can't quite remember right now. But I remember something stood out in my mind, and he said, if I can paraphrase, it says, no useful theory can rest on the assumption that everything is unique. And let me say that again so we can process that. No useful theory can rest on the assumption that everything is unique. You see, I don't think there's anything new under the sun. I think that we go around in cycles. It may look a little different. We, you know, ladies, you know that. We've learned not to throw anything away because, although these days our closets are built so small now, but back in the day, we learned not to throw anything away because the style was going to come back around, especially if it was a classic style. And so I think that we are living in time, like the wardrobe. Things come back around. And we are living in a time where it may look a little different in color. It may look a little bit different in its walk. But listen, it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck. It is a duck. And so I know there's a lot of people that don't like to hear Reverend Harris and people like him who are historians. Reverend Harris is not just a civil rights activist. He's a historian civil rights activist. Did you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? He is a historian, civil rights activist. That's why he always talks about history. And I know that some of us have gotten so cute and so bourgeois, and we feel like we don't have to be told about slavery and all of that. But listen, if you don't know where you're coming from, you have no idea where you're at, let alone where you're going. And so it is imperative that we do have a historical framework to work from, so that we can see where we are on that frame line and see how things look very similar in action. So you, for example, you may not have guys riding around on horses and running after folks and lacerating them back in and putting a rope around them and putting them on trees or castrating them like they did back in the slavery days. Sure, we don't have that going on today. But let me ask you something. Is the uniform that the police wear any different than what the slave masters, police or slave police wore? Are their guns doing the same thing to our young, to our men? They may not hang them up with rope, but and they may not castrate them in the same sense. But when they kill a black man, he is castrated. He's no longer able to give a seed to someone, to a woman. And so that is a form of castration. And when they shoot him, that's as good as taking a rope and hanging him. And so the, especially when they shoot them multiple times, we're still trying to figure out in the 21st century, why does it take multiple shots to shoot a person? It's like hanging them and letting them strangle to death. It's an inhumane way of killing a person. It's a painful way to kill a person. When a gun goes through a person's body, it bursts up a number of organs in the human being. Now, they know that. But, again, we're living in this time, and as this writer says, no unique theory can rest on the assumption that everything is unique. we are not dealing in a unique time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a unique time. And until we can begin to understand that what is going on with us today, as Malcolm X says, the revolution will not be televised, this situation that's going on is historical. It is coming in. It looks a little bit different, but it is the same end result. And so, again, I'm not even sure that they can even talk about reparations, Reverend Harris, because how do they put a dollar amount on the quality of a person's life? And so, you know, that's what I'd like to say. And maybe I don't want to get too theory, but again, it is a dysfunctional behavior that is taking place in our society today. And if we don't speak up for ourselves, nobody else is going to speak up for us. It does not take a PhD. It does not take going to school. It does not take having letters behind your name. It's simply saying, I hurt because my brother or my sister is hurting. That's why we have this radio show. That's why we've come back on the air, so that we've taken our break, but we can no longer sit back and watch these things going on in society without us saying something. And that's the reason why Reverend Harris and myself is back on the air, to be able to offer our value, our two cents, about the situations that are taking place. Indeed, this is an environmental injustice.
But there you have it, Dr. Jean Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia right now is approximately about 11:16 over in Atlanta, Georgia, and so she must be very, very dedicated to stay up to 11 o'clock to be on a show here in California that is about 8:16 here. You know, Dr. King, I want to say to Ms. Harris, because she made a statement on her Facebook, and I want to just acknowledge what she said, because, you know, I don't, people think that I'm anti-police. I'm not anti-police. I'm anti-bad police. I'm anti-police, but, you know, that's what I'm anti. But there are good officers that are here in the United States. I would have to believe when I go to bed at night and wake up that there are officers who wake up, you know, want to do the right thing. I just have to believe that. I might be crazy to think that, but I would just have to believe that there are officers here in America that want to do the right thing. But what we're saying is just like if you have a bucket of apples or a bucket of oranges, for lack of better words, and there's one apple or orange in there that is spoiled, what's going to happen if you don't take that rotten apple out? It's going to contaminate, it's going to spoil all the other apples. And so that's what we're saying, is that we have an institution, a police department here in America that has bad apples in there. And we have to get the bad apples out. If not, what's happening is going to keep happening over and over and over. And my point is that Ms. Harris wrote on her Facebook, she says, you know, she says, when this unfortunate incident happened to me, this car accident, she said the officer was very polite. The officer was very, you know, nice. And so I wrote back. I said, yeah. I said, hey, that's what we pay taxes for, you know, for them to do their job right. And when an officer do the job right, I'll be the first one to commend them. And whoever that officer was that was out there Ms. Harris had this incident, you know, I want to congratulate them for helping our sister. I want to congratulate them for having compassion and taking a time out to take care of her needs, to make sure that she was safe and that whatever medical attention that she needed, that she was being taken care of. So there you go. I tip my hat to that officer. But here we are, Dr. Kennedy, once again in California, down in San Diego. We had another incident down there. But mentally ill. Now, this is a conversation, Dr. Kennedy, that I'm starting to see more and more and more and more. Now, the statistics says within every 24 hours there's a black person being killed somewhere in America. And I'm noticing that there's a lot of mentally ill people who are being killed by police. Family members are calling law enforcement for help. Hey, maybe they didn't take their medicine, maybe, you know, whatever the case may be. They're calling for help. But at the end of the day, when they call for help, the loved ones end up dead. What do we need to do? Now, you know me, Dr. Kennedy. I believe that we can police our own communities. The Black Panthers did it. I believe we can do it today. We just have to have men and women who have some spine and backbone that's willing to go out in the hood and police it. What do we need to do right now? Should we stop calling the police? Should we create a system where the community call a community organization to say, hey, I got a problem here. Can you guys come help me? Or do we keep calling the police, and when the police come out, someone ends up dead?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, our last show we did talk a little bit about mental health and we looked at the statistics. I encourage the listening audience to go back to our 2 nights ago show where we shared about mental illness and what those statistics look like. I won't go over those again, but I will say that this evening I went to a summit that's being held at Atlanta Metropolitan Community College. And they're doing 2 days of this energy summit. And it's really an environmental summit. It's called People, Place, and Power. People, Place, and Power. And basically the gist of this summit is talking about people empowering themselves and people taking control of their own communities. If we will police our own communities, ladies and gentlemen, and not rely on the police who does not even live in your community, he or her is not a neighbor in your community. It's different if the guy down the street around the corner is your neighbor. You see him get in and out of his sheriff's car and drive off every morning, or you see her get in and out of her patrol car, pull out of her garage and leaves every day. That's different. That neighbor is also your friend. That neighbor is also a part of the community watch. They have a vested interest in your community. But unfortunately, too many of the police officers who we're talking about, particularly even the ones who are trigger happy, do not live in our communities. They don't have a sense of who we are, even in terms of our culture. If you were to do an assessment, I'm going to go there. If you were to do an assessment with those police that are shooting so many of these black men, if you were to give them a questionnaire of 25 questions that had to do with diversity, I would put my last dollar, my 401k, I would put it on them to say that they would not get half of those questions correctly. Because whether it's their fault or not, diversity is not taught in the true sense. Cultural diversity is not taught in the true sense of the word. Equality, equity is not taught in the true sense. And so it comes down to you and I, ladies and gentlemen, policing our own communities. Now, it used to happen back in the day. And should I tell you something? That's why some of these gangs came about. Now we have, you know, I guess you're going to say gangs are gangs, or all gangs are bad. But listen, hear me out for a minute. There are some societies, some communities, I don't know if they're here in the United States of America, but there are some societies and some communities where the gangs will patrol that community. You pay them a small fee. Now, I'm not advocating that we go out and get some gangs now to police our communities. Let's make that straight. Please do not say Dr. Kennedy told you guys to go out and get some gangs. I'm just showing you the methodology that works. In this sense. And so those gangs, you would pay them a small fee, and they would patrol your community. They would make sure that nobody rips off the man's store. They would make sure that criminal elements do not come up into that community. They would make sure that everybody is safe and protected in that community. And so surely in the Godfather's days and many Italian communities, many other types of communities have had these sorts of things. It's nothing new. My background is out of the Caribbean, and it's not unusual for streets and blocks where you see people patrolling certain areas, and you look at these gorgeous mansions, but in order for you to even go anywhere near there, you've got to pay a weekly whatever that is, and your community is safe. You can leave your house, and nobody's going to come in there and break into your house because these folks are patrolling the community. Now, that's just what you would call here in America a developing country. Some people still call the Caribbean and Mexico and other countries a third world country. Get with the program. They're no longer third world countries. But even if you look at the concept, are we able to at least police our communities? At the end of the day, you really know who should be policing those communities? Should I tell you who? Are you ready for this? Do you know who should really be policing your communities? Are you ready for the answer? Here we go. Your faith communities. Wait a bit, Dr. Kennedy, who did you just say? That's what I said, the faith communities. You have a church. I don't care what the name of the church is. I don't care what the religion of the church is. I don't care if they're worshiping a piece of stone or they're worshiping God Almighty. If they call themselves a faith community, that is your policing station right there. Those members ought to know the people within that community. They ought to know people who are around that church within a certain radius. They should know who needs help, who has children, who's doing what. But that's unfortunately not what is happening today. We've made the pastors very rich. They have beautiful homes at the expense of members who are giving faith offerings and hoping that they'll get blessed by that. And, you know, God is a good God, so I guess he does bless them out of their ignorance. And so they keep these pastors rich and keep them living large. But if they were doing their job, they would make sure that their communities are protected. If they have that kind of relationship with the pastors, that community should be well protected because those members come in there, they have service, and they reach out and they do what they need to do to make a healthy community, makes that community healthy. So when we look at even this workshop that I'm going to, that's an energy summit, they're really looking at how do we partner with environmental justice? How do the people take charge of their own community? So that's one way to look at that. And that's something that's a work in progress, Reverend Harris. I think that different people have different ways of doing that. But if we go back to your question, should the people be policing their communities? Yes, we should. If we were doing that, there'd be no need to call for a doggone police who's going to come in. And instead of tasering this man, which would even have been bad, but at least he may have lived, instead of taking a gun to him. So we may have to look at other ways. The other evening, I had a Freudian slip. Did I not? I had a Freudian slip. I said, why in God's name are you calling the police? You ought to call your fire department. And if you think about that, I know we think that we only use the fire department just because the house is on fire. But firefighters do a lot more than just put out fires in people's homes. They are first responders. They're first emergency responders. And the way things are today, I'm telling you right now, if I had a situation in my house and I was afraid that the police was going to come in and make a mess of things, I'm calling the fire department. I'm calling someone from the fire department to come in, especially if it has to do with medical issues. I'm calling somebody to come in. I'm calling an ambulance. The last people I want coming up in my house is the police because I don't know if that person's going to be so out of control that I know in my luck I'd get a fearful police officer, someone who's so afraid or someone who's put a premium on making sure he goes home to his family that he might just see an action. And lo and below, in having that action might end up killing. That person is very close to me because they have some mental health issues. So we have to learn how to start policing our own community. That's a conversation that must take place.
Right. That's a good point, Dr. Kennedy, and that's one of the – I'm going to kind of talk about that a little bit. Well, we had our half-minute mark. We'd like for those who are on the line to please don't hang up. We have another 15 minutes. If you hang up, you're not called back in, so please stay on the line. We have a lot of good information that we're going to be talking about here also real soon. Please go to Dr. Jean Kennedy Facebook and check her out. Please go to my Facebook. We'll be back on Monday again at 8 o'clock with some more topics about what's going on in our community. Hotel. So, Dr. Kennedy, you know, the Black Panther Party back in the 1960s, they policed their own community. And so I want our audience to really understand what we mean by police our community. You know, I look at a lot of Westerns, and I'm just a Western fanatic, cowboys, Indians, what have you. And one of the things that I noticed, Dr. Kennedy, during the cowboy era, everybody had guns. Everybody. Even women, they shot guns. The men carried guns, sometimes two guns on both hips. They carry bullets around their waist, extra bullets around their chest. And so I wonder, you know, I said, well, how is it that during that era of time that they use the terminology cowboys, that they could carry guns? And I'm quite sure that they didn't have to have a permit to carry a gun. When the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California, was protecting their community in Oakland from the racist cops from assassinating them in Oakland, California, they went to the west steps of the Capitol in Sacramento, and they read a memorandum, you know, letting this government know that, you know, we're not going to put up with you coming in, killing our women, killing our children, and killing our men. But what I thought was interesting, Dr. Kennedy, was that the Black Panther Party was the victims of police brutality. But yet you had Ronald Reagan, who was the governor at that time, went and pushed legislation to take the guns out of the victim's hands, but not out of the victim, not out of the oppressor hand, which was the Oakland PD that was assassinating them. So to me, that's backwards. Why would you take the guns out of the hands of the people who protected themselves in their community, but you leave the guns in the hands of the police department that was murdering black men and women and children? So why is it that it seemed like the rules change when black people become educated? Because the Black Panther Party was very educated young men and women. You know, they went to Berkeley in Oakland, I believe it was Berkeley College, and they could recite the Constitution backwards and forward. And so when those police came in their community, they would start, you know, Malcolm X said it best. He said, "The worst thing that the white man could have done was let me read his history book, let me read his book." Because at one time, it was illegal for black people to read a book in America. You would get killed, hung, whipped. So the Black Panther Party understood that that was their power, to read those books, to understand the Constitution that was created, not for us, but it was created for the white man, for his benefit, not our benefit, because we wasn't at the table, and please correct me, Dr. Kennedy, if I'm wrong, we wasn't at the table when the Constitution was being written. We didn't have any input when the Constitution was being written here in America. So I'm kind of confused on all of this. Maybe you can kind of help me understand all of this right now.
Well, I don't really think you're confused. I think you're being facetious when you say that that you're confused. You very well understand, but I understand the conversation here. Reverend Harris, you and I know that the bottom line is that when rules are and laws are made, it is made for everybody that's in that land. And black people should not be treated as second-class citizens. So if there is a law, and even the law today, that says you can own a gun, you need to have a permit. And if you pass that back the check-in of your background check, as it were, if you pass your background check, then you are okay to have a gun. So that means whether you're black, white, green, blue, rich, poor, ugly, good-looking, if you pass the criteria to have a gun, you have the right to have a gun. this is what we're dealing with. It's a really a psychological problem that's happening in our society. When human beings have shame and guilt, when a human being suffers with shame and guilt, they are reactionary. Shame says that you have done something wrong. That's why you live under the shame cloak. When you suffer from guilt, guilt says that you are doing something wrong. The reason I'm saying that is that our white culture here in America, the dominant culture, the ones who wrote the Constitution, as you said, Reverend Harrison, they did not write that with people of color in mind, nor did they write that with women in mind. But those powers to be have come through generations upon generations who have suffered with shame and guilt in the way they have allowed black people to be treated in their country. This country has never really dealt with a reconciliation like South Africa has dealt with. And so they consistently continue to put a Band-Aid on it. This is the reason why people had a lot of problem with Barack Obama in terms of what he looked like, in terms of what he represented. People really got afraid because they said, oh, my God, here's a black man who has one of the most powerful positions in the land, and he's going to take that powerful position and abuse it on us. So while the opposition have tried so often to discredit him, it has also trickled down around us. So when you talk about the Black Panthers, if the black voices were behind the Black Panthers and not saw them as a group that sat out there, if all black people came together like we're asking them to do today, even around the Black Lives Matter movement, and if they would come together in one voice, we would see a much more unified front. If they had all come together, those Black Panthers would not have been put in a position where they had to give up their guns. And so we learn from history and don't repeat the behavior that we do in history. Black people must learn to work together for the good of the whole and stop being so bourgeois and feel like, oh, it doesn't bother me. I'm not part of that. I don't relate. We have gotten so caught up with government jobs that it just seems like we're not really being part of our community at large.
Right. Well, Dr. Kennedy, we have a caller on the line, 4400. Welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctor, Dr. Harris, Dr. Kennedy.
Take
out
that
Atlanta,
one
on Georgia.
All right.
4400, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Go
4400,
ahead and speak.
Are you there?
Go ahead and speak.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes.
Go ahead and speak, sir.
All right. Hey, how you guys doing today? Thank you for having me on.
Great.
All right, great, my brother.
We have about 7 more minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, well, well, I had a question. You're talking about the Black Panthers and talking about occupying our neighborhoods. Would that be armed? Would that be armed or non-armed?
Well, can I answer that? I think it depends on what your state's law is. If the law says that anyone can own a gun, whether you're a Black Panther or not, I would think that somebody who's going to take care of a community is going to arm themselves accordingly. Now, are they going to use those guns on somebody? That's something that those groups have to decide. When do you use a gun? If you have a gun, sir, and someone breaks into your house, you're not going to go, well, I got a gun. Should I use it or should I not use it? You bought that gun for a reason to use that. So I think that if we're talking about a group police in our community, they would have to come up with what the rules are, what would be the appropriate rules for police in their community, for guarding their own community. So the idea of if they had a gun, would they use that? If a gun is designed for someone to have and they pass that background check and they're part of that policing group, I would hope that they have their rules to know when to use a gun and when not to use the gun, or whether they're going to use a gun or not. So am
okay.
I making sense? That I think that
yeah,
would be...
Yeah, you're making perfect sense. I just want to make sure that, no, I understood exactly what you meant.
Yeah.
The reason why I was
that
asking...
I don't know if Reverend Harris agrees with that. I don't know if Reverend Harris agrees with that. That was just my opinion.
I do think that it's important that, you know, like you said, how we can police our own communities. No, I do think that we need to make sure that we're able to, you know, help keep each other safe. I think more so than anything else, I think that everybody needs, you know, needs to be armed because of the fact that we do need to make sure that we are aware of what's going on in America. I mean, there's a black man, an unarmed black man getting shot almost every 23 hours. You know, there's, these are statistics. So somebody was just killed just the other day in another county. And I think the best thing we can do is, one, we need to be able to, you know, enforce the laws of the land that we have, as well as we need to be able to protect ourselves from any type of attacks, because the moment that every time you see in history where black people start, you know, doing for themselves and start, you know, actually building some level of economy or, you know, some type of economic, you know, value, you see, you know, attacks where you're seeing our people being, you know, shot down, blown up and killed by, you know, other Americans, you know, and hate groups. So I think that it'd be foolish not to be armed. I think that we definitely need to be armed, especially given the history of what's happened in this country. So I think that we need to make sure that we are protecting ourselves, and we also have to have everything else also in place. You know, just like a Black Wall Street who had their hospitals, who had their, you know, their theaters, their grocery stores. That's just my opinion.
I totally agree with both of you. We have like four more minutes left. You know, Malcolm X said it best. Malcolm X said, you know, and I'm just going to use a word verbatim that he said. He said, if the white man has his guns, we need our guns. He said, if the white man has his Navy, we need our Navy. He said, if the white man, whatever he has, we need to have the same thing. And so I'm, you know, the older I get, the more I'm starting to believe in that. That Malcolm X was right. He spoke truth to power, and whatever they have, we need to have. You know. Look at what's happening in Fresno, Brother Marcus and Dr. Kennedy, Sister Harris. Is that Dyer has the entire city on lockdown on surveillance cameras. Now, if he has cameras, we need our cameras, right? Because those cameras only to do what? To follow and monitor us. So we need our own cameras to follow and monitor them and whoever else we need to monitor. And so I totally agree with you, Brother Marcus, Dr. Kennedy. We have applications, and I got a box full of them right now. And we have a constitutional right to fill out those permit applications. Now, if we were in Texas or if we were in Atlanta, a state that you have the right to carry, we wouldn't have to fill out no applications. Am I right, Dr. Kennedy?
You are 100% right. Right now, I personally don't have a weapon, but right around me, there are so many people. There may be one in the house that I'm staying in, but there are people. I have relatives who will drive. They have their guns in their cars. My daughter's husband carries a gun in his car.
Right. I mean,
he has a right to that.
Dr. Swearington in Boise, she teaches at Boise State. She tells me all the time that the students, and she's a very radical white women's studies professor, she tells me that the students walk in her classroom with guns on their hips. I'm talking about college students walking in class. Just like Brother Marcus, you go to City College. She said people walk in, the students walk in with guns on their hips. Now, as a teacher coming from California, I mean, so if you say something that's too potent or too radical, you have to worry about, you know, taking cover or something, right?
Is that serious right now?
We have a minute left. Dr. Kennedy, go ahead and take us out.
So what you're saying, in essence, Reverend Harris, is that we, even as black people, have to start wondering where we're living, which states we're living in. This is going to take a real radical change. Some of us are going to have to look at the kind of jobs we're keeping. We're going to have to look at where we're living, which states we are, because it's going to be where your safety is going to be what's most important. So this has been a wonderful conversation. We are not advocating violence, ladies and gentlemen. We're advocating safety. We're not advocating violence, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else who's listening to our show. We are advocating safety. We're about keeping our families and ourselves safe from whoever the person is that wants to cause us harm. That's what we're saying tonight. It's been a wonderful show.
All right. What does Bob Marley tell us, Dr. Kennedy?
He says one love, and we got to do this thing in the spirit of love. One love, brothers and sisters. One love. That's the only thing that's going to get us through this. One love.